Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey guys, Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show, where we help you to stand out and to get ahead at work. Now, as you know, we like to switch things up here, keep it interesting, and to continue that tradition, today on the podcast, instead of me interviewing an expert guest, we're going to have the guest deep dive into their topic. You see, you'll be hearing audio from a LeadX webinar. Now, of course, there are dozens of great webinars on leadership, management, communication, productivity, and more, all archived in the LeadX app. Just visit leadx.org for more information about our webinar archive. So enough on the setup, enough background information. Here is Vanya Mathis to introduce our guest and to hand it over to them. Enjoy.
Hi, welcome to Super Thinking, the big book of mental models. The world's greatest problem solvers, forecasters, and decision makers all rely on a set of frameworks and shortcuts that help them cut through complexity and separate good ideas from bad ones. They're called mental models, and our host today is going to show you how you can use them to upgrade your brain. He's the CEO and founder of DuckDuckGo, the internet privacy company and private search engine. He holds a bachelor's with honors from MIT in physics and a master's from the MIT Technology and Policy Program. He is also the co-author of Traction. Please welcome Gabriel Weinberg.
Hi, everybody. My name is Gabriel Weinberg, and I'm here to tell you about mental models and super thinking. So I prepared a presentation for you. And first, just a little bit more about me and my co-author, who also happens to be my wife. So I am the CEO and founder of DuckDuckGo, which is an internet privacy company that helps you protect your information online, but I'm not talking about it today. I'm also the co-author of Traction, another book on marketing, and I have a undergrad and grad degree from MIT in physics and technology and policy, which is kind of economics, law, and public policy. And my wife and co-author's name is Lauren McCann. She's a statistician and researcher who has a PhD in operations research and statistics, also from MIT, undergrad in math. And her focus has been in the bio area. So she works at GlaxoSmithKline for the past 10 years or so before writing this book. And has been published in places like the New England Journal of Medicine. And we actually walk every morning and talk about all sorts of current events and decision-making and our life. And we usually talk in the realm of mental models. And so we wrote a book really all about that. And so the first question is, what the hell is a mental model? Well, mental model is a fancy word for concept. And so there are concepts everywhere. So, you know, democracy is a political science concept. Addition is a math concept. But there are certain concepts that maybe start out in a discipline, but are actually generally useful everywhere just to help you become a better decision maker in both your professional and personal life. And these are what we call kind of the super mental models. And our pitch is that if you know all of them, you can really be a much like basically world-class decision maker and upgrade your thinking into what we're calling super thinking. So an example of one of these models that is, you know, from a discipline but applicable beyond is critical mass. So I was a physics major. Critical mass is a physics concept. It's the mass of material you need to have a nuclear chain reaction. Now, that seems very specific to physics, but other things can have critical mass too. A party that you throw at your house can have a critical mass of people to get the party started. A product can have critical mass. When you get enough people behind it, you know, it can really take off. And a political movement can have critical mass. And so once you understand that something could be a critical mass problem, you can all of a sudden reason about it in much higher levels and quicker ways to do better strategic thinking. You can ask questions like, how can I get to critical mass faster? Or is there a subset of a population I can focus on that would reach critical mass in that subset? And what will happen if I reach critical mass? And so there are about 300 of these concepts that are just generally widely useful. And if you know all of them, you can just be an amazing thinker and strategic decision maker. And that's what this book is about, is laying out all those systematically as kind of one big guide, which is why it's called the Big Book of Mental Models. But, you know, 300 is a lot. And so what we did is group them into 9 thematic chapters in a narrative fashion that makes it really easy to understand. And what I'm going to do today is just walk you through kind of what those themes are. So to give you a quick, though, example of the power of why this is useful, think of just some math concepts. These aren't the super mental models, but these are the ones that you're definitely familiar with, everyone's familiar with, addition and multiplication. So when you first learn math, you learn the first concept, really beyond counting, of addition, adding numbers together. And then all the other arithmetic concepts are actually just versions of addition. So multiplication is just repeated addition, and subtraction is really negative addition, and division is really repeated subtraction. But once you know multiplication and you have a calculator and you're faced with this problem, 24 times 13, you're not going to type in 24 plus 24 plus 24 13 times. It's just slow. You're just going to go 24 times 13. And that is because you know the mental model of multiplication. And once you know it, it's just a much faster way to think and use the tool. And that's really what mental models are about, is once you have these tools, you can have, they're effectively shortcuts where you don't have to start from scratch every time. You're just going straight to higher level thinking. And so that's really the secret of the book. This is a, for Avengers fans, this is a throwback to that, the Hulk. The Hulk is always angry, which is why he can turn on the Hulk very easily. And our secret is we're always using mental models. And if you know them all, then basically you can be faced with any problem and be kind of the MacGyver of decision-making and just be a much better decision-maker. So the 9 chapters, I'm just going to run you through very quickly. There's about 40 mental models in each chapter. I'm obviously not going to talk about that. So I'm really just going to give you an overview of the theme and 1 or 2 examples. So the first chapter is really all about being wrong less, in the sense of we tend to rely on our intuition, but our intuition is often wrong, unfortunately. And that's because, you know, our brains were not necessarily designed for strategic thinking. They were designed, you know, to be hunters and gatherers. And so we have all these biases that can trick us really easily. And so to be wrong less, you really have to overcome these biases and sort of use your intuition, check your intuition. And so a couple examples of that is the framing effect. And so how information is framed to you, or how you frame it to other people, can have a dramatic difference in how you interpret the information if you're not careful. So this example was a real example. It was in a really unfortunate incident where some officers went to the wrong house on a suspicion that a criminal was in there, but the people were not a criminal. And they were kind of antsy, and there was a dog that barked, and they actually, all these shots went off, all from the officers, killed the dog, and one of the officers shot another officer. You know, 2 major news publications decided to frame the headline in completely different ways, and the people who kind of read these articles took away completely different things. And so you have to be really careful of how information is being framed to you and really think critically about that. And the same thing as a tool, if you're framing information, kind of how you're going to frame it for the best effect. So that's the framing effect. Another one from this chapter is arguing from first principles. This is a scene from Apollo 13, great movie, where there's a malfunction on the ship and they need a part that they don't have. And so on the ground in Houston, they take all the parts that are on the ship and they say, we got to turn this somehow into plugging into this. And that's what the guy's holding up 2 things. And what they had to do is go back and think without assumptions, you know, what can we do with the core ingredients to come up with a solution? And that's really what arguing first principles are. It's throwing away all your assumptions and really arguing why we should do something from basic principles. And writing those down really helps you overcome all your biases, because you really can't take anything for granted. You have to justify everything from scratch. So that's chapter 1. Chapter 2 is all about unintended consequences. And so the idea here is that, you know, there are a lot of things that happen and people are like, well, you know, I could never have predicted that. But that's generally not true with unintended consequences. There's a lot of mental models that you can predict if you kind of know, that you can use to predict unintended consequences if you know what you're looking for. A couple examples of that, one of my favorites, is called the Streisand effect. This is a picture of Barbara Streisand's mansion or one of her houses that she didn't want anyone to see. And a photographer took this aerial photo, and literally no one had looked at the photo. It had been downloaded 6 times on this photographer's website. But then she sued the photographer to get it taken down. And all of a sudden it became, the photographer went to the press. It became a national news story. Then the photographer made it public domain. And so now it has a name. Not only is everyone available to see it, it's actually in the public domain. So it's on Wikipedia, and there is an effect named after it. And the Streisand effect, therefore, is something where you try to basically cover it up, and it draws way more attention than if you just left it alone in the first place. And so this happens time and time again. And it's something to watch out for in terms of, it's an example of one of these unintended consequences that you could avoid if you kind of think about this mental model. Another example, which is kind of in the news now, is herd immunity. And so the idea here is really came about in vaccines, where enough people in a community are vaccinated, then you can prevent, you know, outbreaks. And it turns out, like a lot of measles outbreaks right now, you need 95% of the community to be vaccinated. If it goes below that threshold, which is called the herd immunity threshold, you can get an outbreak. But beyond that discipline, the same thing applies for like rules in your organization. If people aren't sticking to the processes, you can easily devolve into chaos. And so you need some kind of threshold of people buying in to following things, or else you can get outbreaks of kind of bad behavior. So the third chapter is all about productivity, spending your time wisely. All the mental models around doing that. Really kind of the theme model for the chapter is leverage, which is a concept from physics of using a small amount of force to move a bigger, much bigger mass. And as it applies beyond that, it's basically thinking of, you know, what are the small amount of effort I can do or put in to get a lot of results? And that's really the theme of a bunch of mental models of thinking about how to do that. One example of that is what's called the default effect. And it really is saying that defaults matter. And this is a graph of organ donation rates across different countries. And countries that have a default opt-in model versus a default opt-out model just have dramatically higher organ donation rates, because you have to opt out versus opt in. And so when you know that and you're designing any kind of process or product, thinking about what the defaults are is like a key mental model to really effectuating whatever change you want. The fourth chapter is all about kind of models from nature that are really applicable outside. Critical mass, from kind of physics and engineering are inertia. Things that have a lot of mass have a lot of inertia. And so if they're moving with any kind of momentum, it's actually really hard to change. And so as a metaphor, there are lots of business processes, whole businesses, whole industries that have a lot of inertia. And if something you can recognize a lot of inertia, you realize that it's going to be really hard to change that thing. On the flip side, you can create processes yourself that have a lot of inertia, and you kind of want to do that, because once you establish something that has a lot of inertia, it will also be hard to change, and you can benefit from that inertia. One way to operationalize that is this other concept from engineering called the flywheel, which is something where it's a big wheel that's really heavy and really hard to get going to spin. But once you got it spinning, it retains its energy, and it's very hard to get it to stop. And so when you think about that mental model, you want to do something where you can incrementally improve it and make the flywheel go faster and faster and faster, and it compounds on itself in your processes. A good example is Amazon. One of the reasons they've gotten so big is they had low prices, and then they could attract a lot of customers, and then that fed into getting more scale, so they could make prices even more low and deliver things to you faster and attract more suppliers onto their market. And it's one big flywheel that is really hard to stop or change. So chapter 5 is all about statistics. And the basic idea here is that, you know, numbers are a way of life, and they're increasingly more a way of life in terms of understanding what is real, what is truth, and what is not truth. And a little kind of graphic cartoon to help you understand that is, you know, the opposite of kind of using statistics is anecdotal evidence. And some people like to say, well, statistics can be made to do anything and say anything. And while that's true, it's still better than anecdotal evidence. And you can, if you know the right mental models, you can wade through the actual statistics and understand what's underneath them and see for yourself what's actually truth and what's not. So you can separate kind of the wheat from the chaff. And so I'm not going to go into this, but the book actually explains these things finally without math and equations, really. So anyone can really understand these concepts and pick apart kind of statistics and things you see every day about research studies and kind of understand exactly what they're talking about. And more importantly, whether they're kind of BSing you or not. One kind of example of this that comes up a lot and is a fallacy, one of the main fallacies, is correlation does not imply causation. So this is a silly example from the site Spurious Correlations, which I suggest you go to because it's very funny, where bedsheet tanglings in the US is directly very correlated to cheese consumed per capita in the US. Now, are those things causally related? No, absolutely not. But this is a cautionary tale to say that you can find correlations in a lot of things, but unless you know the mechanism or have any reason to believe they're causative or have a study that proves they're causative, you should really take it with a grain of salt. So chapter 6 is all about decision models and thinking about ways to upgrade the current decision model most people use, which is the pro-con list, with a bunch of other better decision models like cost-benefit analysis, decision trees, scenario analysis. We kind of walk through all of those different models you could use as replacements. And why you might want to do that is this model of local versus global optimum. So if you think of like a hills, an array of hills, and the top of the biggest hill is the best place you could possibly be, the global optimum, you don't necessarily want to get stuck on a local optimum, kind of a top of a smaller hill. But if you don't see the full landscape, you may think you're getting higher and higher on the small hill, and maybe you are, but you don't really see that there's a bigger hill out there that could be even better. And so some of these decision models are about trying to understand the landscape and figuring out how to get on that higher hill. And one of the other kind of key fallacies that come up in this is just another example, is garbage in, garbage out. So this is a illustration cartoon about that. And what it says is, if you have any kind of decision-making model, whether it's a pro-con list or something better, and you put garbage into it, just kind of bad data or assumptions, or you're missing things, you're just going to get garbage out too. And so you have to be really careful of what you're getting, what are you putting into your decision framework. Chapter 7 is all about, remember there's 9 of these, dealing with conflict. So it's the models about how you deal with adversarial situations, which unfortunately are a regular part of life and business, and kind of all the things that come up with that. And so one of the things that happens all the time, another cartoon for you, is influence models. So you go into Target, maybe for one item, and you leave with 50. It's because you were kind of influenced to do that. And there are a whole set of actual mental models that are broken down that really explain how this influence occurs that you can both watch out for and then potentially use yourself. One example of those is reciprocity, where if someone gives you something, even for free, you feel a need, it's like a human need to return that favor, even if they're doing it on purpose to get more from back from you. This is just an example of if you donate to a campaign, you're much more likely to get access, even though you're supposed to get similar access just for being a constituent. Chapter 8 is all about managing models and managing people and growing yourself and others just to be better at your career and whatever you want to do. And it centers on a concept, a series of mental models about how people are different. And so kind of like knowing yourself and knowing the people around you. This is just introvert, extrovert, one of the main differences that people know, but we cover a lot of others. And then taking that into a central model of improving yourself called deliberate practice, which is a process of the best way to learn something, basically any skill to become an expert at. It's a 4-step process where you set a goal for yourself, you practice that skill right outside your comfort zone, and you get feedback in real time from an expert to help coach you as to what you're doing wrong. And if you can establish that either in yourself or others, you can get people at higher levels very quickly. And then it also covers some of the models that result in problems when you try to do that. One of them is called the Dunning-Kruger effect, and the other is called imposter syndrome. And it basically describes what happens when you try to do deliberate practice is you start out and you learn something really quick. You learn the basics, and you're really overconfident in your ability at that point. And then you get a little farther along, that's called the Dunning-Kruger effect, and you get a little farther along, and then you realize how much you don't know, and your confidence drops, but you way overcompensate, or a lot of people do, and you think you're way worse than you are, and then you can get into this area called imposter syndrome, where you feel that you're kind of an imposter when you look at all these experts out there. But in reality, you know a lot more than beginners, and you're just working up that learning curve. And so when you're engaging in deliberate practice, you kind of have to be aware of these and other psychological models to help people get through these roadblocks. And then finally, chapter 9 is all about kind of becoming a really unique person in the market and becoming having a sustainable competitive advantage against people you're competing with, either professionally as an individual or as a company. And it centers around this concept of really to be differentiated. This is a funny take from the movie Taken. You really need to have a unique set of skills that differentiate you in the market, or else you're a commodity. And it kind of talks about the mental models around how to develop those unique skills. And then also how to use those skills to get kind of outsized returns. This is one example of a model around that, where if you think of to get an outside return, you really have to make a bet that other people aren't making, because if everyone thinks the same way, you know, you're not going to get a huge return with that. But if you're right about something that no one else is doing, you can really stand out and produce really outsized returns. So I know that was a complete whirlwind, because there's 300 of these in the book and they're woven together into those 9 chapters. But I just wanted to illustrate some examples of models across those themes. And I encourage you to read the book to get the full appreciation. And if you do that, I'll kind of end with a main takeaway here, which is another model called the Circle of Competence. It comes from Warren Buffett. And what it says is you operate really well in decision-making when you stay in your circle of competence, that inner circle of what you really know and what you know well. And when you venture out of that circle of competence, you start to make poor decisions, and you make really poor decisions in that second ring where you think you know something a bit. It's kind of like that Dunning-Kruger effect, but you're not really in the circle of competence. And what mental models do when you kind of know and learn all of them is it increases your circle of competence drastically for decision-making and general problem solving. And that's what we hope to do for you with this book. And thank you very much.
Friends, if you like this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take a minute, leave a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Ratings are invaluable for attracting new listeners. And I like to convert those listeners into leaders, because, you know, I'm on a mission to spark 100 million leaders in the next 10 years. And if you want to become the boss everyone fights to work for and nobody wants to leave, check out the LeadX platform with Coach Amanda at leadx.org. And if you have 10 or more managers who could use some binge-worthy training, send me an email at info@leadx.org, leadx.org, and we'll talk about getting you set up with a totally free pilot for those managers. See if they like it. If they don't, that's fine. We go away. Part as friends. But if they love it, you've just found yourself a new resource for them. Remember, leadership is influence. You're always leading. How are you going to lead today?